This is the Hip Hop African Podcast, a show where we have in-depth conversations about African hip-hop culture and artists. Your host is Msia Kibona Clark, a professor in the Department of African Studies at Howard University. For more information or to contact us, please visit us at hiphopafrican.com.
Forever moving borders in my dreams like midnight marauders. I come with elements so vehement adorned with ability, cerebral cortex. The last thing you expect is that my mental fortress is decked. I'm cautious of the forces inside my head. Enormous orbits like the beaded threads hold me down, report the message, sent a ripple effect when I spoke over their heads. The wicked fled, like my brother Bob said, we do this for the love, and that's just enough to break the spread. It's imperative.
We are speaking with Eavesdrop in Cape Town, South Africa. So Eavesdrop started out in the early 2000s in the Cape Flats area of Cape Town, South Africa. She is an activist and a multi-hyphenate creative whose rhymes are very original and really speak to the diversity one finds in South African hip hop, something I've really kind of talked about a lot. So I guess the first question I want to ask is, as someone who also considers herself an activist, looking at the early 2000s in South Africa, what was going on that made you really want to speak to it? And then why was hip hop the platform that you chose to speak on it with?
I think at the time, the early 2000s in Cape Town in South Africa, for me, there was just a lot happening in terms of the movement of hip hop, especially in terms of events. There were lots of spaces. Open mics were a regular thing at various different locations. There was always a platform for poets and MCs to showcase their work. It was a good environment for, I guess, challenging yourself, but also reflecting on what kind of skill you thought you might have by presenting your work, right, to an audience who didn't know you. So just in terms of the scene itself, the hip-hop scene itself was very much alive. Every week there were various events happening. People were very dedicated to making sure that there was content. So, you know, friends who were MCs or DJs or graffiti artists were always working on projects. It just, there was an excitement in the air. You know, it was like... I think after 1994, we took a few years in South Africa to kind of realize what was happening, what was taking place politically and the transition that was taking place. And I think by the early 2000s, people had started becoming more celebratory. And that was reflective in the fact that we could now connect with each other in ways that we weren't able to. And so I think that, you know, trickled down and filtered through into hip hop, into the movement, which for me felt very much alive on the streets. So at the time, I had been spending many years writing in my bedroom, listening to myself rhyme, you know, and I had really nobody else to kind of teach me or guide me or reflect myself back to me, you know. So I decided that I felt ready and that I just wanted to be out there and I just wanted to test Eavesdrop, you know, out in public, as opposed to just in my bedroom.
So I'm glad you mentioned that in terms of kind of not seeing that anything reflected back. Because South Africa was, you know, one of the first countries to really begin embracing hip hop on the continent, and it was, you know, really early on. And so you've got groups like Prophets of the City, Black Noise. Why did it take so long for women to really get out there and start recording and performing? Because you're talking like late 70s, you know, it kind of comes, early 80s, Black Noise, Prophets of the City doing their thing. So I know, you know, apartheid's going on, so that huge impact. But like 20 years almost?
Yeah.
So why, what was the, do you have any ideas on what was the reason?
I actually can't say. I think I've always witnessed women as being a lot less, dare I say, egotistical. needing a lot less validation.
Okay.
And so then kind of, you know, being less recognized or acknowledged, because I think as women, we tend to demand less, right? We don't need to constantly be in the spotlight. We have these skills, but, you know, there's the boys' clubs running all around us. And, you know, we have the option of trying to fight against that and break that system to try and get in. Or we can just quietly fade into the background and stay where we are placed. Mm. And I think for a lot of women, that conversation probably takes place internally where you say to yourself, well, is it really worth the battle that I'm going to have to face in trying to dismantle the systems that are already there, the brotherhood that's already supporting itself, that has been for centuries, you know? So how willing am I to try and break the stereotypes? How willing am I to try and, you know, forge a path that hasn't yet been walked? And so I think, in my opinion, I think that's a lot of the reasons why some of the women who are there are, one, either very quiet, or two, end up giving up and just stepping back, because when looking at what you need to fight through to just get your microphone and your voice heard, to just get your hands on the turntables, it just seems like it's not worth it.
And I do notice that there have been these periods where women have kind of come to the fore and step back. So, you know, I think I remember Ms. Ntabi talking about that, like kind of leaving the scene for a bit and coming back. And, you know, being very, very kind of honest about talking, you know, about, you know, just dealing with depression. I know Gigi LeMaine has talked about depression and just kind of dealing with a whole bunch of issues, including being a woman in hip hop, which in itself is, you know, hip hop is a very misogynistic space.
Yes.
And so it can be very difficult. Mm-hmm. But how would you describe, because I know, you know, the industry loves to pit women against each other.
Oh, yeah.
And so how would you describe the space here in South Africa? Is it a space where women tend to be more supportive, or is that still kind of like a real serious issue here?
I think, you know, I can speak mostly from my own personal experience. I've never really felt that women are less supportive of me, and I've never felt like I need to give less support to other women. Again, it boils down to the same thing. We don't necessarily make demands. Mm-hmm. We don't take up that space, you know? And I think probably when a woman has made the decision to fight against, you know, the existing structures and try and break them down and make a space for herself, most of the time, I can probably say that we don't look back to say, who else wants to join me of the sisters? So there is a possibility that we do not offer each other support in that regard. I know I'm probably one of those people who don't offer support in that regard, simply because I sometimes feel like you're going to have to fight so much harder that if you need me to hold the door open for you, how are you going to learn the weight of this door? Mm-hmm. You know? And maybe that's to the detriment of the representation of women in the movement. But I know when I was starting out, I didn't care about what other women there were. All I knew was that I was hungry for that microphone and that I was going to kill all those MCs and I was going to do it single-handedly, you know? Mm-hmm. And I sometimes feel like one's representation alone should be encouragement for other women to come up and say, I can do that, you know? Mm-hmm. But then to what extent do I have the responsibility to help say that thought you just had is right, you can come and stand right next to me if you wish. I think that's something I still need to interrogate a little bit more, because I keep thinking to myself, do I overestimate the strength of women? Because all I've ever witnessed was the strength of women. I've never really seen weakness in women. I struggle to think of examples, you know? So I think sometimes I overestimate that strength by not offering enough support, because I sometimes see offering support as a, I don't know, like creating a handicap where you're saying, you can't do this by yourself, so let me help you up. But I feel like if you see me there, then it would mean that you can know that you can do it too, because all you see is those other guys. But how did I get there? There must be a way for you too.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know. It's a complicated thing for me.
But I think, you know, it's hip hop. I mean, hip hop is, you can't get into hip hop and not list your name as on your top 10 list.
Right.
You can't say everyone else and then have you as number 10.
No.
So you can't get into hip hop and like, ah, I'm an okay MC.
No.
So you have to have that confidence. And if you don't, you're never going to make it.
Right.
And so one of the things, even the most kind of politically righteous MCs has braggadocio.
Yeah.
You know, and it's almost like you have to kind of have that strength. Yep. And so if you don't, then you literally need to kind of figure that out in the very beginning.
Right.
And sit down and kind of, you know, figure something else out.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, what you were saying in terms of your presence there is also a signal
yep.
to other women that I can do this.
Straight up.
And so, I think that that's, you know, and, you know, one of the things I was saying earlier is that South Africa does have a significant number of women who are out there, you know, and I think, you know, even though when you look at other countries, you had women in the 90s actively recording music, even though South African women didn't come onto the scene till later,
yeah.
when they came onto the scene, they came on in big numbers.
Yes, right.
And have like just kind of continued. And so you had kind of more and more generations of women. Mm. And so I don't know if you've kind of ever taken a chance to really look at that fact that you have so many women who are active. And, you know, sometimes I've been trying to, you know, right now in the U.S., there are, of course, a lot of women who are active, and people have talked about that.
Yes.
So I don't know in terms of how South Africa compares to the U.S., but I know when you look at most countries, there definitely are more women, you know, active here. And if you had, you know, one, if you had noticed that, and two, what you thought accounted for the large number of women active in the South African hip hop scene?
So I definitely have noticed that, and I've seen it grow over the years as well. And it's very, very encouraging, because when I was coming up, I had Gardessa and there was a crew called 4 Feet Deep.
Mm.
There were two young girls, MCs, who were around for what felt like a flash in the pan and disappeared, you know? Mm. But I'm definitely seeing a whole lot more women come up. I was, in fact, watching a short video clip last night of another female MC from Khayelitsha. Mm-hmm. And she's fresh and she's young and she's full of energy and, you know, she has her own style. And I'm seeing a lot more of that. What I'm thinking contributes to that, for me, strongly is representation.
Mm.
Because we live in a world where screens are just ever more present, mm. you know? And so representation through the media, representation just, you know, around the way. And I think there's this sense of being umbokoto in South Africa, you know, where women of the struggle were known as umbokoto, you know. They were known as rocks. They were known as pillars within their communities. And I think South Africa's political history ties in somehow to that, where these young women are seeing that it requires strength for you to be an MC, but that they're also seeing representations of themselves within their communities, young female MCs coming up everywhere. And it feels almost like a bit of a domino effect, you know, like someone struck a match and threw it into the felt
mm-hmm.
and the fire is just spreading wild, you know? So I think really it's various factors, but what I think plays a huge role is the excitement of knowing that as an MC, you're seen as umbokoto, you're seen as that rock, you're seen as that pillar, and you are somehow helping to preserve that legacy that your country is known for its strong women, you know? And I think specifically for women of color, young girls of color, they look to what that representation means historically, politically, and now in hip hop and in music and in arts and culture. And I think they want to be a part of that. It's an excitement for them.
Yeah.
There's a thrill to it, you know? And so even if not all of them are going to stick around for the next decade, the bottom line is we live in a time where every little thing is recorded. They'll be able to look back on this in 20 years' time and say, there was a time when I was that.
Mm.
There was a time when I contributed to this, you know, rare movement of women who are known as umbokoto. So I think it's a South African thing for me in that sense,
mm-hmm.
where women have that particular kind of energy, and emceeing seems to represent that well. You know, the next best thing, if you can't, you know, be politically aligned as part of perhaps the ANC Women's League, you're going to be, you know, an MC. That's your next best bet.
Now, as you were talking, I was just, I had to take note of that, the protest culture. I think South Africa, apartheid ended, but the protest culture
stayed.
I mean, you know, there have been a few times I've visited South Africa and just bumped into a protest.
Yeah. Like, hey, any random day, we have a protest for you. What you want?
Exactly. And so that energy, the energy. One of the things also with your music, I think that's really, you know, great is that it is, I don't want to, you know, I really don't like the word alternative when people are talking about hip hop music and music in general, but it is, it's not, so it's, you're an activist and, but it's not like this kind of overt political, like, you know, stop gender-based violence and, you know, vote.
Yeah. Black Lives Matter.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I remember once talking to Yugen Blackrock, because I think her is very similar. It's not this kind of
overtness.
And so she, I remember her saying that I'm an African woman. I don't necessarily need to sing about it on every track. I am it. And so what influences your style and kind of the decisions you make about representation?
For me, I think it's really important to incorporate the... So firstly, I think music is magic, right? Mm. It's an energy that is from realms that are so divine that I think we still haven't begun to understand that, even, you know, a microcosm of it. But so I think for me, bringing spirituality into music is a very, very important thing to do because of the fact that you're using frequency to infiltrate people's minds, right? And so obviously you can have good intentions or bad intentions with that. But essentially for me, what really is important for me is that I bring about a particular kind of frequency. Mm. And that can come through the concepts that are introduced, right? And so even if you don't understand necessarily what it is that I'm talking about in detail, something about your energy will resonate. And you'll feel that frequency, and it will change something about your makeup when you leave. And so for me, what's really important in music is that when I say I am an activist and I use music as a weapon, that it's not, like you said, me chanting, you know, if I can even say this, dumbed down phrases, mm-hmm. but rather trying to lift people's natural ability to reach really high and ask them to reach even higher. Mm. Because I feel like it's important that we be challenged and that we challenge when we're dealing with these kinds of frequencies. Because I think music is a weapon that speaks to how there's constantly a battle. And so the struggle never ends, right? The struggle is constantly there, but the face of it is constantly changing. Mm. And so when you are delivering words and sound, it's very important to be cognizant of that and to be mindful of that. Whatever you're doing when you pick up that microphone is a rebellious act of war, and that you are fighting, you're choosing a side of the battle, and that you are fighting, right? Mm-hmm. So some of my concepts speak about spirituality and spiritualism and how important it is for us to remember that outside of this, you know, meat sack, you are an entity that is so divine. You are from a realm that is so incredible, and that you have a responsibility to help people feel a little bit of that every time you take to the stage, every time you put something out, every time you share something, you know? So, I mean, for example, you know, like a protest song for me will sound like a chosen weapon, lady of the mic, I'm always checking, the verbal resurrection, bringing back, I come to reckon, when I step in the place looking for the base like foundation, what we building is a sound station, for mental concentration, there's war against the nation, displacing us, gentrification, while we stay sedated, intoxicated, stagnated, afraid to fight the beast, we must awaken, knowledge is the source before our souls get taken, forsaken, rebel with the cause, I come through with the force, changing rules and regulations, entering ciphers for demonstration, like protest circulation, I'm vigilante from the shanty town. Top to bottom, this is how I break it when we're chanting Babylon down. You know, so for me, it's you know, I ask for my ancestors' presence when I rhyme. I ask for my ancestors' presence when I write. So I'm the vessel. I'm not, you know, eavesdrop is whomever channels through her. Mm. And so it is important for me that whomever's going to channel through is coming to bring gifts and not to take from the people, because the people keep being taken from.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's important for me that whatever I bring is a gift. I have to leave you with something, something that you can take with you that will last you for quite some time, you know? How else can I put it?
Okay, well, yeah. So let me ask, looking at the, because I, how do I even follow up with that? Okay, so the energy and what you're kind of expressing through your lyrics,
yeah,
and what is influencing the music, the content from early 2000s,
yeah,
till now.
Yes.
You know, environment, what's going on around you, what you're experiencing, what you're feeling spiritually, emotionally. How has that changed, and what, you know, I guess really what social changes externally going on in South Africa, going on in the world.
Yeah.
How have those changes that have been happening influenced your music today?
Yeah. I think in the 2000s for me, it was, I was trying to run away from home, straight up. I was just trying to escape my reality. Everything for me was about escapism. Mm. So I was smoking weed all day, every day, because I just needed to constantly be away from the third dimension. I was like, forget this place and all its traps.
Mm.
Home was difficult. Mm. Life, not just in the township, domestically was difficult. Mm. You know, yeah, single parent home, where the oldest kid has to do, you know, adult things at a young age to help out the family. So I was just trying to escape. I was trying to run away from all of that. So for me, everything about what influenced my music then, and eavesdrop even then, to what influences me now was so different. Mm. I mean, lyrically, it sounded like equilibrium in sound canals, flows on earwax, stepping on the beat of balance with verse stacks and backpacks, while Alice got trapped by that cat who stole the magic sneakers and reverse bring it back and sat up in a tree with a big head and a small hat. But the obvious imbalance of weight and status and rhyme relevance, the story simply did not matter, said the agent to the underground scatters. On the contrary, laws of nature, told the translator, like a wallflower in the garden of freaks, eavesdrop smoking beaties with determination to detect the heat of running feet when mics speak. My cup overflows, erupting whole volcanoes into the open vowels with vowels and consonants, burning consonants. Nine lives live forever like Alice in Wonder. So I pass up the collection plate for an ashtray to spark the ponder. So for me, everything was, what's going on? Everything was confusing. Everything was, so I just needed to escape. And I wasn't really reflecting on my bigger world. I was reflecting on what was happening inside of me and what was happening in my home, you know, to where I am now. And I guess, you know, my gradual progression was to start to see myself as a part of something, as opposed to when I started, I saw myself as not a part of something. I was separated from something. I was the black sheep. I was the odd one in the family. I was the different one. You know, I was everything that was other. And as I grew as a human being and as an artist, as an MC, I started to see myself as a part of something. So I started to see myself as a part of this movement. I started to understand that the influences that I wasn't paying attention to, where they came from, I started finding a space for them, you know? So I was creating a map, and it was starting to build a picture for me, and it was guiding me, basically, right? To where I think eventually I stopped smoking so much weed and came out of the cloud. and I started to engage with my world, and I started asking myself questions like, well, if where you come from was what was intended for your life, then it means that there's a story there, right? And so it means that you have to go back there and you have to figure out, you have to put the pieces, even if it seems strange, you have to try and put them together until you can start to see something form. And that's going to be what feeds you, and that's going to be what helps you create the next chapters, all right? And so I started to look at, you know, my world, and I started to understand my place as a woman, as a black woman, as a South African woman, as an artist, as an MC, as a human being. I started to find my place, you know? And that started to reflect very much in my music, which is where I then started to get the understanding of my responsibility in it all, because your gifts are a responsibility. Your freedom is a responsibility. And so how are you helping? How are you giving back? And how are you contributing to where you come from, to who you are, and to those connected to you? How are you helping them? How are you reaching out? How are you extending your light? And how are you sharing? How are you exchanging? Because it's all about exchange, right? Hip-hop is very much about exchange. It's call and response. And so how are you calling and responding to your people? How are you calling and responding to your environment, to your world? And so I started to task myself, which then also reflected in my music a lot more, because I started to realize that I need to express my weirdness, and that even if my people didn't understand it, that wasn't what was important. What was important was that they saw me doing it anyway. So that even if they walked away and said in Afrikaans, wat the fuck did she now net gesê? Which means, what the hell did she just say? You know, the bottom line is they would forget that they didn't understand my words. But the image of me being there with the microphone rhyming to a beat for them would be something that stays with them forever.
Yeah.
And they would always relate to me from that perspective. So, you know, my rhymes eventually started to change to reflect who I am. I used to be ashamed of where I come from. I used to feel like I'm not good enough, you know, but I started to realize that that's my superpower, you know, and I started to realize that I needed to have pride in that because the material world really has no bearing on my being. And so my music started to feel more like home as opposed to this alien planet I landed on, you know? So, yeah, I mean, you know, one particular song that really sticks out for me with regards to that is Cape Flats Kung Fu, which I consider to be somewhat of an ode to my people, which basically says that even if you judge us by where we live and how we dress and the fact that we don't eat fancy food, the bottom line is you don't know how beautiful we are because our beauty has nothing to do with that, you know? So yeah, eavesdrop came from obscurity, I'd say.
But one of the things I think with your music, though, I think it's so universal in the sense that it speaks to, I mean, you know, even now, you know, what you're, you know, the bars you dropped are, they speak to universal experiences.
Yeah.
So they're not just speaking to Cape Town experiences or Cape Flats or even South, or even African experiences. They're speaking to kind of universal experiences. And I, you know, again, you know, remember when I first heard your music and it wasn't just that I understood the words, you know, because they were in English. It's not just that I understood the words, but was able to connect to the ideas, the concepts.
Right.
And so it, you know, you were speaking about experiences that were universal. You were thinking about, you were talking about spirituality, which many people can relate to. So do you find that you often are people who are reaching out to you or connect, or people that you're connecting with are also outside of South Africa?
Yes, very much so. Very much so. Not only outside of South Africa, outside of the continent. And even the people that I do connect with who are from Africa and from South Africa and from Cape Town, I think have a similar experience, you know? So it has been very much that people outside of the continent seem to, I don't know, feel what vibration, you know, frequency I'm releasing or operating from. And that's been both comforting and sometimes saddens me, you know, because it's great to know that you can reach people and that our humanness is what connects us at the end of the day, right? But sometimes you just wish that the people in your heart who are your people can really feel you for the intention that you mean. And so you can just hope that they do. But a lot of the times, if you're not making a lot of noise and if you're not, you know, showing how what you're doing is getting you that fancy car, getting you that fancy house, you know, getting you to dress up in a certain way, then, you know, you will be overshadowed. And that's just the reality. And I think sometimes also just recognizing that when you have a particular message, your reach is going to be different. It's something that you have to accept, you know?
So is it, it's like if you, you know, lived in a big fancy house, drove a big fancy car, had the same lyrics.
Yeah.
Then people would,
because
it's like, oh.
Because you can quantify it in a way that they can identify with, because when that kid goes to sleep that night, all he wants to know is that if Monisha can, you know, make it out of here, then so can I in that way. So, I mean, I would travel and I would come back home to Parkwood and, you know, I would explain to the kids that I've been in a different place and it took an airplane to get there and back. But it wouldn't mean anything because what did I bring outside of an experience? You know, I'm still living in the same conditions they're living in. So how is what I'm doing really enriching me? And so why should they bother? Because they just want to eat a nicer meal or a meal on a regular basis. And they just want to wear Air Max for a change. You know? And they want to have 500 rand to throw up in the air. So, yeah, and I mean, I think also, like, the media really helps us cut out our work because, you know, the stereotypes that are perpetuated, you know, when you live in the ghetto, your TV's never off. Mm. It's the, when you wake up, the first thing you switch it on and it stays on all day, even if you're not watching it. And so it's just constantly running a program on you, you know? And so we just have a lot of work to do in terms of rewriting that code. And I think it's what keeps us going, at least me. It's because the work never ends.
Yeah. It's interesting because in terms of looking at TV and looking at imagery and kind of images of money and everything, I was talking to some people the other day about that Netflix show, Young, Famous, and African.
I haven't seen it.
And everybody hates it. I think it's universal. I think especially artists. And I know I mainly watched it.
Yeah.
But one, you know, they've got Diamond Platinum, who's Tanzanian. So I wanted to see him. And then Nadia Nakai, who's the only MC on there.
Yes.
But it was unnecessary.
Yeah.
It was an unnecessary amount of, and it was not only unnecessary, it was untruthful.
Right.
So there is wealth in Africa. There are people who are wealthy. There are people who, you know, live in big homes. But that lifestyle is not truthful.
Right.
They don't eat like that.
No.
You know, they eat regular food. You know? So it was just like
They call it the soft life. It's called the soft life, where everything, no more hardship. Mm-hmm. It's called the soft life. And it's like, it's a well-known term just across South Africa. Mm. If you've made it to the soft life, mostly through a blesser if you're a woman, blesser being, you know, a wealthy older man, mostly from the church or some shady business, then you've made it and you now have the soft life, you know? Mm. Never mind what you have to give up for the soft life.
Yeah.
So, yeah. What's it called? Young, famous, and African. Okay. I think I've seen some ads about it.
Probably. I mean, because it was shot
Nadia
in South Africa.
Nakai, I think.
Yes. And it's shot in South Africa. Uh-huh. And they've got a couple other South African celebrities.
Okay.
On
I was checking out.
Yeah. I think you may get through one episode. But it's very... Yeah, it's just not honest at all. But it is, like you're saying, I think it's so universally true in terms of, and it's one of the reasons why the record industry, the music industry is so able to pick off our most talented youth with money because they know how hungry they are.
Yeah.
And they know that they'll do anything to eat, many of them. And so if it's like, okay, well, you know, trap is what's hot, that's what you need to be rapping. That's the formula right now that's profitable.
Yes.
And we don't want anything else. This is the formula right now that's making money.
Stick to it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And a lot of youth will, and it's hard to really fault them too much.
Yeah.
So it's a very dicey thing. I mean, I don't know. It's very interesting. So in terms of your projects, have you done a lot of collaborations with artists from outside of South Africa?
I've done some collaborations. In 2005, I participated in the Red Bull Music Academy. We did some collaborations for that project. I've worked with some artists for a project called Each One Teach One in Germany. And where else? I've done some projects with the Red Bull Collective in New Zealand. What else? I'm trying to think. Not much else, no. Everything else has been here, pretty much. Yeah.
And I know you've been in at least two documentaries. I know
Hip Hop Revolution.
Yes. And then is it Counting
Heads? Counting Heads I wasn't in.
Oh, you weren't in Counting Heads?
No. Strange, isn't it?
Yeah.
It was even strange for me.
And, you know, I haven't seen that.
I was away at the time
they
did the interviews. I think I was in in the States, actually, at the time.
Ah, okay.
I think that's what it was, yes.
Okay.
That's what it was.
Okay.
But it was Hip Hop Revolution and then something else that's in the pipeline at the moment.
Ah, okay.
Which I don't think I can mention. I was about to say.
Okay, I do remember Hip Hop Revolution. I actually saw they screened it at a film festival in Maryland.
And oh wow!
I think Shaheen was there, I believe.
Oh wow!
At that one, yeah. Yes,
that was done by Wiam Williams. At the time, I think it was their production company was called Shamanic Organic at the time, but I think they've changed their production name now. Mm. But yeah. Gosh, that was many, many moons ago, and I was living in Parkwood, yes. I remember the interview being done in the kitchen of our council flat.
Okay.
Yeah.
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 Right. So what do you have? Are you working on anything now? What's coming up? I know you can't mention the documentary, but what else is...
Well, I've been working a lot on theater project just because theater's actually... one of my first loves.
Ah.
Yeah. Okay. And I never got to formally study acting and drama, but that's something that I've been working on quite a bit. So I did a play last year, my first ever play, called Memory is a Weapon, about four artists from the Cape Flats and their struggles. Mm-hmm. And then I've done another project called Tqei Kari, The Awakening, Cape Flats Kung Fu, which is a performance art piece that I did this year and last year. Last year I did it for a virtual online arts festival. And this year, I extended it and did it to an actual audience at Baxter Theatre just over a month ago. So I'm working on that now. I'm working on another project, a one-woman play, hip-hop theatre piece called The Calling.
Okay.
So I'm busy developing the script for that at the moment. And I'm busy conceptualizing working on an EP.
Wow, that's a lot.
Because I have an EP that was recorded in 2019 that never made it out.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just going to take some of that and I'm going to add some more to it. So yeah, that's where my head is at the moment.
It's a lot. I did not know. So I did, when I was looking online doing some research, I did see some stuff about theater. And so So that was actually true.
It was true.
Okay, nice. Yeah, nice. Yeah. Now, in terms of artists that you were listening to, who were some of the artists that you listened to?
That I listened to just in general?
Mm-hmm.
Oh man, so many actually. Where do I begin? One of my favorites is MF Doom. For the way that he is himself. I listen to a lot of different kinds of music though. Like I love jazz, so I love Donald Byrd. Mm. I love Thandiswa Mazwai as well, just because her music reaches a very deep spiritual depth for me, you know? One of my favorite MCs actually is AC Alone, just because he's weird and I think he's incredible and unafraid to be who he is. I'm also listening to Cleo Soul. I really love her sound and her voice. She's quite dope. Who else am I listening to at the moment? I love Masejo. The Mouse Outfit, a hip hop crew from Manchester in the UK.
Okay.
So sick. IMDDB as well. She's an affiliate of theirs. I dig her style so much. Who else am I listening to? Hugen Blackrock, one of my favorites of all time. She's just, she's otherworldly. Who else? Gosh, a lot. A whole lot. Erykah Badu is always there.
Mm.
She just never leaves.
Yeah.
Sade is always there. She never leaves.
Mm-hmm.
Maria Makeba and Nina Simone are always there. They never leave.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot.
Okay. Nice. Yeah. Well, thank you for agreeing to do this interview. I've been a fan for a very long time, since I first heard you song Ends in Each Drop. I don't even remember the name of the song.
The album was called Kingdom of the Next. The song was called, I just remember the hook, man. You're taking me. It's Time Space Invaders, intricately dropping ancient words upon papyrus papers, goddess otherness, eavesdrop the prophetess, enlightened minds from paradigms, beyond the next. What's the track called? I forget. You're going to task me. I'm going to go find it and I'll send it to you.
That was the song. I was like, oh my God. Yeah. Trying to find it online was, yeah.
Did you finally find it?
No. I actually got the episode. So I have
episode. Okay.
So I don't have the song, but I have the episode.
I should actually speak to Enz and find out from her, because she only had physical copies made and I don't know if she ever digitized it.
Okay.
So I should speak to her. I don't even know if she's working on any music at all, but we do touch base from time to time.
Okay.
Yeah, like with that. Life getting in the way, as it does.
Yep. All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you very much. Long overdue.
What you know about the Cape Flats isn't all true. This is where some train their minds to summon the dragon, like the forces of jiu-jitsu and kung fu, mastering the art of disguise to discover the hidden prize, a light in the form of pious wisdom, a social system of meditative practice to survive the soul snatchers who aim to claim without witness. That's why my temperament is to
like abstract off the top. Imagine I sip from the golden gallon, watching the assassin from my labyrinth, the tavern on the rings of Saturn, cultivating planets as I master habits in my attic, systematically engaging magic. I spend my time traveling galactic, discovering fantastic telepathic beings, awakened seraphim, step into my dream, scrolls of the unseen, creating light beams above the consecrated temple of the venerated queen.